Hey, everybody. Hello. Welcome into the Speak Up Table. You know, we continue today our programs with opposing candidates competing in the primary election for your vote. And the winner of the primary will advance to the November ballot as the Republican Party nominee. You know, the importance of our primary elections cannot be this May 19th. It cannot be overstated. So welcome into an excellent opportunity to be an informed voter. The candidates today want to be the Republican nominee for state senator for District 1. They are Senator Jim Woodward and former Senator Scott Herndon. So with that, we're going to go to our first commercial break. And I again want to encourage you to give an ear to our local business advertisers. They are so important to our community. And listen in to the PSAs and the various local activities that you'll hear about. Always lots of good information for you on local radio. All right, we'll be right back.
ProX Home Center is your spring cleaning headquarters with items you won't find anywhere else in town, like the popular Tornado Spin Mop, Swiffer Wet Jet, and a brand new item, a handheld power scrubber for those tough bathroom cleanup jobs. We can help spring clean outside too with great deals on items like long-handled garden tools, nozzle sprayers, gorilla carts, leaf blowers, electric mowers, and so much more. ProX Home Center, your hometown everything store.
The Hydra on 2nd and Lake is Sandpoint's original steakhouse. Stop in today for lunch or dinner.
Mondays are local appreciation all day from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. 15% off your bill with an Idaho driver's license. No exclusions, even on fillets and crab legs. Proudly serving Idaho-raised and processed USDA choice beef and everything fried in Snake River Farms beef tallow.
Come on back to the Hydra for lunch or dinner today. The Hydra, 2nd and Lake in Sandpoint.
Brown's Northside Machine and Gear has been your local diesel and heavy equipment expert since 1990, serving the logging, trucking, and construction industry, offering trailer service, parts, and repairs with a full hydraulic hose shop. They build them while you wait. Brown's Northside Machine and Gear, specializing in repairing all types of diesel and gas trucks, pickups, off-road vehicles, RVs, and heavy equipment. Stop by the shop on Triangle Drive in Ponderay. Brown's Northside Machine and Gear.
Hi, this is Brett Taylor with Taylor & Sons Chevrolet, serving the greater Sandpoint area. Chevrolet and Taylor & Sons have designated April as Truck Month, and the centerpiece is Silverado 1500 trucks. As part of Truck Month, Chevrolet has provided Taylor & Sons with a kickback for every new Silverado 1500 sold during the month of April. Without getting too far into the weeds, Taylor & Sons has decided to make it easy and pass this money back to you. What this means is the lowest prices of the year on every new 2026 Chevrolet Silverado 1500. The timing is perfect, as Taylor & Sons currently has the entire Silverado 1500 spectrum in stock and ready for delivery. Suspension modified, diesel and gas engine, short and long boxes, work ready to ultra luxury, Taylor & Sons has it in stock. Discounts as high as $11,000 off MSRP and new well-equipped Silverado 1500 trucks starting at under $47,000 plus taxes and fees. You can view our entire inventory of new Silverado 1500 trucks online at tschevy.com. There you will find multiple pictures, detailed descriptions, and clear transaction pricing for every vehicle in stock. For gas-focused service, a world-class facility, and value for your money, it's Taylor & Sons Chevrolet.
You're so close to winning $1 million. Use your Camas Rewards card at Kalispell Casino in 2026 to earn entries into Northern Quest's guaranteed $1 million giveaway. All year long, use your Camas card playing the slots at Kalispell Casino or dining in Wetlands Restaurant. Then visit Northern Quest on New Year's Day to win life-changing money. Earn entries to Quest for $1 million all year long at Kalispell Casino, the best entertainment in Ponderay County, just 20 minutes north of Newport.
All right, everyone, we are ready for you to listen to our candidates today. Say hello and welcome with me to Jim Woodward and Scott Herndon. Welcome, gentlemen. All right, Jim, we're going to start with you. Introduce yourself to the audience, please.
Thank you, Barbara. I appreciate the opportunity. It's great to be here today face-to-face where we can set the record straight on anything that needs to be said. I am the state senator right now. This will be the sixth year I've served. asking to continue to serve the community, just looking to provide predictable and stable government for folks. Just a little light note here, looking on the wall behind you, I see the plaque that mentions the Rush Limbaugh radio campaign. Yes. Reminds me of a little bit of what I would call Rush Limbaugh trivia, if anybody can remember back to 1993 and the Dan's Bake Sale. And if you remember that, there's the hint that that was that Fort Collins event. It was quite a day in the Rush Limbaugh era.
That's going back, boys.
I met Dan.
Okay.
Got a signature.
So anything else?
No.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. All right. Scott Herndon, introduce yourself.
Okay. So hi, Barbara. Thanks for having us today. Appreciate the opportunity. And I am Scott Herndon, and I've been in the Senate in 2023 and 2024, and I've lived in Sandpoint area since 2004. So it's been 22 years. We bought our first house over on South Division, and it's a commercial zone property, so it's been used as a business ever since we sold it in 2006. My wife and I have had four of our children here. We've raised eight children in Sagal. We're actually not too far from Jim as the crow flies, probably a mile or something like that. And I'm running again this year because I look at the affordability issues mainly for up here in North Idaho, and I think there's a lot more that we can do at the state legislative level to make things easier for people here in North Idaho. There's not a lot we can do. We want to mostly promote free market capitalism, but there are some key things that we can do, and so that's part of my agenda running this time.
All right. Thank you for that. Well, Scott, I'm going to keep it with you. The first question is in the area of tax relief. And the first tax I would like you both to look at and comment on is property tax. Are you more in the mood to eliminate that tax or just continue to play with exemptions?
So actually, it would be my long-term goal to completely eliminate property tax. And it's amazing how much that resonates with people. I've been talking about that ever since I started this campaign, especially on my social media over the last couple of months, and I have posts that are nationwide that get thousands of shares on social media that people really want to see property tax go away, and there's a number of good reasons for it. Number one, we spend over $14 billion at the state level, so I'm just going to put the total in perspective.
Okay.
$14 billion at the state level, we'll keep it simple. And to keep it simple, we spend about $2 billion at the local level, and that's what's funded by property tax. So if we just keep it that simple, basically you're talking $16 billion total government expenditures, and one out of $8 is going to pay local government and is funded by property taxes. And we, over the past 10 years and over the past 6 years, we have increased government spending at the state level significantly above inflation and population growth. And if we were to have some more spending discipline at the state level, we could eliminate property taxes. There's a number of great reasons to do that. Number one is the inequality of the tax. So I always use the example of my road. I pay for county government at, let's say I pay a dollar, my neighbor pays $2, and my other neighbor pays 50 cents. And it has nothing to do with our ability to pay. It's also the only tax where the government essentially has a lien on our home, and no matter how many years we've owned our home, and we have a lot of people up here in North Idaho that are on a fixed income, they're retired, and the government could take their home if they don't pay.
Okay, so ultimately you want to eliminate, but it would be a step-by-step. All right, that's a lot of detail there, Jim. What is your position on property tax?
Well, it sounds like there are two things that we're agreeing on here this morning. One, the property tax system needs some help. We need to do something different. I agree with that. We've been working on that actively since I've been in the Senate. We did raise the homeowner's exemption one time while I was in the Senate. We advocated for it this year and didn't get there. So I'll talk a little bit more about that, but the other thing I'd say, I did notice Scott's social media post this morning about coming here in 2003, what it was like, log trucks through town, the IGA there. So I guess we do agree that, and, you know, it was a little bit reminiscent. I agree that it was better before he got here. I came 30 years before that, and so I've seen an entirely different level of Sandpoint when the timber industry truly was alive, before the spotted owl and other issues, other conservation issues. And when we moved here, a house wasn't $170,000. We bought on Pine Street for $13,000. Mm-hmm. So that's a different time. But the numbers do get bigger. That's the facts of life. When we talk about the state budget, just to address that, this the state budget has gone up, but a little bit of that is cherry-picking data. If you look over the decade, the state economic activity as measured by the gross state product, which is like the GDP, but instead GSP, gross state product, the gross state product has gone up by 95% in a decade. And in that same time, state spending has gone up by 75%. So does that mean that we're not keeping up with the state? I think that's what it means. When you drive on the road, tell me that it's easier to drive on the road today than it used to be. It's not. It's hard to get on the highway because we're not keeping up. We have not increased lane capacity in the state of Idaho at all. But we've increased lane capacity in the last 20 years by 1.9%, while the population has gone up by 33%.
I want to bring you
back to property tax.
You wanted an exemption this year. Do you want to continue with exemptions as the way to go, or do you ultimately want to eliminate?
I don't think we eliminate entirely, and here's why. We need to get the property tax system lined up with and taking care of the homeowners, because the disparity between what residential real estate does during strong times as compared to commercial and timber and ag. And that's always been historically that way. We've had that problem for more than 70 or 80 years, that the residential values take off, people's homeowners tax gets to be too high. So we have a system in place brought by a citizens initiative. And our citizens initiative, the intent of that was that half the value of your home is not taxed. But I think that we still need to maintain that local control by paying. We don't want to have Boise manage our Colburn waste site. We don't want to have Boise manage our sheriff, our fire districts, water districts, any of these taxing districts, the library. Should we manage that from Boise? I don't think so. We make our own best decisions when we're here in the neighborhood. We know what's best for us. Let's make sure that we can tax at the local level, make those decisions, and we'll be better off in the end run. But the idea that we would get rid of property tax and fund these local taxing districts from the state is a farce. We already know that doesn't work well for us. Okay. Ask the Ponderay mayor how the sales tax distribution works for the city of Ponderay.
Right. I've had him on. He's talked about that. That's why they like that 1%. They get a little small, but they get the whole thing. Okay, Scott, I guess the issue is if we eliminate property tax, what does that do to local control of funding our local boards, libraries, sewers, and waters?
So it doesn't change anything about local control, Barbara. And we proved this with House Bill 292 in 2023. And that is a bill that right now you'll see on your property tax bill, if you're a homeowner, you'll see a homeowner tax reduction of hundreds of dollars a year on the typical property tax bill. That's funding that's coming from the state because of House Bill 292 and House Bill 521 in 2024. When I was in the legislature, we overrode the governor in that case. And nothing about local control has changed when we are able to pay 5 to 10% of your property tax bill, because the funding mechanism actually is a completely different set of Idaho code from the control mechanism. And schools are a great example of that. 79% of Idaho's public schools are funded by state revenue, and yet we still have school boards, and we still have local control of our schools.
And we have local control because of elections? That's going to be my question.
Well, two things. You're electing your boards for your taxing districts here locally, so they're accountable to voters here locally. But also, Idaho code is where we're a state where the legislature delegates authority to the local governments, and it's done in Idaho code. And so over 130 years, we have put into Idaho code local control and governmental authority. And just because you're talking about changing your revenue stream doesn't mean you have to touch those sections of codes at all. And we didn't with House Bill 292 and House Bill 521. And that would be my goal going forward, is replace property taxes with state revenues, because it's not right that a widow on a fixed income is facing the potential loss of her home, or that neighbors are paying for governmental services not based on their ability to pay or unequally. And so for a number of reasons, I want to get rid of it.
All right, Jim, I'll bring this back to you. And a quick thought, if we continue with exemptions, then myself as a property owner, I'm never really free of the burden of coming up with property tax, no matter what happens. I'm never really set free in ownership. So that's just my comment as a voter. But respond again to what you're saying.
You're not set free from the sales tax or income tax either.
Well,
it's and so let's go back to House Bill 292. That did happen. That was some property tax relief put in while Scott was in office. We did the same thing again and added to that while I was in office this most recent time. So that's not unique. But that still is just your sales tax going back to homeowner property tax relief. And so that is that's a shift of tax burden. That's a design shift. And so I would say that when we talk about that it won't change, I think that assumption is naive. There are 700,000 people in the Treasure Valley with different interests than the 50,000 people in the legislative district that that I represent here. And we have seen that happen because back in 2018, that was when the sales tax distribution was changed significantly, where it went out goes out more per capita, and that's what has caused the problem for Ponderay, because we got outvoted in the legislature by the Treasure Valley. And so that's the kind of thing that does go on. We have different interests. The closer you can keep decision making to home, the better. That's why I'm all for minimal government. I would rather make my own decisions individually. Now, we do some things here in town that we have to do together, or in the county. I'm not going to maintain a fire engine myself, so I'm happy to pay for a fire district, but I want to keep as much of the decision-making as close to home as possible.
A quick thought for both of you to comment on, and we can stay with taxes because I also want to get to income tax, but as a voter with sales tax, I still have choices to, you know, for what I'm buying or what I'm doing and how I cut back. With property taxes in particular, I have no choice. I get a bill and there it is. It's just, you know, there it is. I don't have the choice that I have within sales tax. And that's just really, I don't even know how far that goes, Jim and Scott, with the budgeting issues. But as a voter, that's what I see.
I understand that. But I think psychologically, which is easier to bleed lightly every day on sales tax and income tax, because we don't see those. We feel when you oftentimes, a lot of people feel that homeowner's tax simply because they have to write a big check. And that's part of it. But look at where we stand in relation to other states. Our property tax burden is not huge. I'm not justifying it. I'm simply saying, right, I think we need to correct it, and we can do that through the homeowner's exemption, which is in code.
Okay, Scott.
I would just say the key is property tax puts people in an untenable position that I think is unreasonable for government to perpetuate. So when we had the revolution in 1776, we were coming out of a feudal system in Europe where people basically worked for the land for their lords. And with property tax, we still do that. When we implemented the income tax in 1931, that bill was called the Property Tax Relief Act, because at that time, state government was funded by local property taxes. And so that bill eliminated property taxes funding state government. And just like property taxes funding state government did not mean the locals controlled state government, you can have the state fund local governments and the state does not have to control local governments. When we passed the sales tax in 1965, Governor Smiley was the Republican governor at the time. There was $26 million of property tax relief that year because of the implementation of the sales tax. So now I'm saying, let's finish the job. Let's move away from this system that's fundamentally unfair. Imagine that the government could come into your closet, evaluate the value of your clothes and the wardrobe, and then tax you on what they declare the value to be. And then if you don't pay, they take your clothing.
They take my clothing.
That is exactly what property taxes are. And I think in America, we ought to move away from it. There's much more fair sales tax. If I buy a Lamborghini, I can probably afford to pay some more sales tax than a person who buys a used Yugo. Income tax arguably is also tied to your ability to pay. And so I prefer other forms of taxation, and we have the revenues at the state level over time that we can begin to whittle away and eliminate property taxation.
Okay, Jim, I'm going to bring it back to you. Can I change the topic to income tax?
Sure, but I have said similar things. I agree that the property tax system needs some fixing. I just think that we don't swing the pendulum to zero.
Eliminate.
We fix it.
Okay, exemptions you like. Idaho income tax, 9 states have no income tax, but I'm pretty sure they have high property taxes. And Idaho is among the states that do not tax Social Security income. But we do have income tax in Idaho, and We are one of the few states that still income tax retirement and pension income. So I know this is like a big weedy area, but just on the surface, Jim, do you feel there needs to be some adjustments in income tax for Idahoans, whether maybe in the retirement and pension area for people over 65 or 70?
I am happy to look at that because I think the idea that we provide a retirement system and then we tax the retirement benefit from that. All those transactions have happened. So
is that something you would be carrying forward into the next legislative session, or it's just something that is?
I'd be happy to support that. Yes, you bet. So what we do have in Idaho, though, is we have a three-legged stool of taxation. We rely on income tax, sales tax, and property tax, and that's a great balance for us. And because it provides that the ability to continue services and provide the services that folks expect even during downturns, it has worked well for us for a very long time. Idaho is a stable state. And you also, if you look and compare us to other states, we're right in the middle of the band on all of those. So instead of taking off on a tangent and being out in the extreme in one category of tax, the system is geared toward fairness. That's really what taxation policy is about, is fairness toward all. And that's what we're working toward.
Okay, so leaving property tax for the moment, go ahead, what do you have?
Let's talk about the three-legged stool. So when we talk about fairness, sales tax and income tax hit people more fairly. So I would say just because we have a three-legged stool doesn't mean you actually need it. It's a nice analogy, except a lot of states don't have income tax, so they don't have the three-legged stool. And we actually have a dozen to 24 different taxes in Idaho when you start counting tobacco taxes, gas taxes, and all the other taxes and fees that you pay.
Gas taxes, sales. Tobacco taxes, sales.
So the point is, you don't need it. If you have enough revenue from other tax sources, you don't need property tax. There's some arbitrary statement that says we need to have property taxes when it's absolutely unnecessary, and that's why I support it. Now, income taxes, we lowered income taxes last year again. We lowered it when I was in the legislature. We lowered it when Jim was in the legislature.
I've lowered it
prior
to that.
He voted against a $253 million income tax last year. I would have voted for that. Almost every other Republican voted for it.
Because it was lower.
It was lower. 5.3% is the flat income tax rate. I think it was a good idea to go to a flat tax rate. I think it was a good idea to move it down to 5.3. And clearly, we have enough revenues at the state level that we could afford to do it, because our problem at the state level is a spending problem. We actually still grew spending this year. And we could talk about some of the areas of the budget that are really bending the state budget.
I think we're going to spend the whole program on taxes. However,
talk about other things.
We've got...
I got a reply on that because
I know,
you just said
hold it. Thought we're 3 minutes late on doing a little business. We're going to do that right now. We'll be back with Jim and Scott.
A beautiful garden starts with quality plants, and the best plants are grown with love and care at the Flower Farm north of Sandpoint. The Flower Farm is open for the season and jam-packed with perfect pansies and heavenly hardy perennials ready to plant now. Plus, pick your gorgeous hanging baskets now while the selection is good. Open 9 to 5 Monday through Saturday and 10 to 4 Sunday. Located on Selly Road, just off Colburn Culver. And remember, healthy plants for happy gardens are grown at the Flower Farm.
Hello, Don Thomas here for Selkirk Glass and Cabinets, and we have the perfect way to invest your tax refund and get rewarded at the same time. For a limited time, you can receive up to $100 back per qualifying mail guard window and patio door when you buy from Selkirk Glass and Cabinets. But hurry, this offer ends June 8th. So now is the prime time to upgrade your home with energy-efficient mail guard windows and patio doors designed for lasting comfort and style. Don't miss out. Visit Selkirk Glass and Cabinets. That's the place to go.
It's almost time for Lucky Number Tuesday at Bi-Mart. Thousands will win Knoppers hazelnut wafers just by matching their ending number. Plus, buy them for just $2.50 with Tuesday-only pricing. Match your entire number and you'll win other great items, including Coleman's Tideland sleeping bag. Make sure your favorite Bi-Mart is marked as your home store, making it possible for you to win with your entire number. Thousands win every Tuesday on Lucky Number Tuesday at Bi-Mart, where you just match and win.
If you're a private landowner with even a couple of acres of timber, it's wise to periodically hire a professional logger to assess your property for threat of wildfire and disease. Then, work to minimize those threats with highly selective thinning. Careful, strategic thinning of the timber on your property not only helps minimize the risk of wildfire, disease, and pest infestation, but encourages new growth for long-term sustainability. Since 1990, Sierra Logging has been working with private landowners to help protect their assets. Property lines are clearly defined, roads carefully established or maintained. Leftover slash and brush is methodically piled and the site dutifully cleaned up afterwards. Log truck drivers are courteous and sensitive to landowners and their neighbors. And you, as a landowner, are paid directly by the sawmill. No middleman, ever. Phone Sierra Logging for a free consultation at 509-671-1158 or visit sierralogging.com and make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
If you develop land, you know the frustration. The lot that won't perk. The soil that stops a good project in its tracks. Before you walk away, call EcoJohn. Our discharge-free wastewater evaporation systems can open up properties traditional septic systems can't handle, giving developers and investors a new path forward. No mound systems, no drain field, no sewer. More buildable lots, fewer surprises, better returns. Septic John by EcoJohn. Build where others can't. Visit SepticJohn.com or call EcoJohn today to learn more.
News Talk 97.1.
Hey, everybody, as usual, we've got it going on here at the Speak Up table. Today, we have two gentlemen who want your vote in the May 19th primary. They want to be the Republican nominee that will be on the fall ballot for Idaho State Senate District 1. That's Boundary and Bonner County, I think, essentially, those two counties. They are current incumbent Jim Woodward and former State Senator Scott Herndon. So here they are. We've been pushing around on tax relief. And you had a thought. Did you hold that thought,
Jim? I did hold that thought. Middle age, but I still held it. I just wanted to reply, you know, to the idea that the vote that I did vote against a tax cut last year, and for a couple of reasons. But I had signaled clear back in 2022 because I had voted for two income tax cuts. Idaho has drastically reduced its income tax rate from 7.4% down to 5.3%. We did that over 7 or 8 years in five cuts. And in 2022, I could see that we were getting to where I thought we should be in that balance. We had cut the income tax rate twice. We'd gone to a flat tax. And so when it came time in 2025, I said, no, I think we're going to get out of balance. And you saw the result of that this year, the budget struggles. So we cut the income tax rate by about a quarter, and that was resulted in about a $250 million reduction to the to tax income to the state. We also cut the transportation budget this year to balance the budget, which we have to do by the Constitution. We cut over $250 million out of the transportation budget. And that gets back to my point, matching economic activity in the state of Idaho to state expenditures for those basic public services, the basic services, public safety, education, transportation. We have to provide those. Otherwise, we're going backward. We feel it on the road in the quality of our life.
Okay, you have a quick one?
Briefly, yeah.
Okay, please.
So we actually grew state spending this year. We grew it by 2.5%. The problem isn't a revenue problem. And so this is why I absolutely would have taken
how many more people came to Idaho this year?
More people came, but the problem is not revenue. The problem is where the money's going. And the biggest consumer of money right now is Medicaid. And Medicaid expansion. And so the problem is when we add these governmental services, and we just added the expansion population in 2018, it is now consuming, essentially, instead of the legislature taking on the expansion problems, they cut everywhere else and they kept health and welfare completely intact. And what they needed to do was spend more time diving into the health and welfare budget instead of hurting the people that are disabled and other populations that were hurt by the budget this year. It wasn't a revenue problem because we grew spending from 14.1 to 14.45
okay.
billion.
So
let's
this
talk
is
about
the
that.
Topic
how do
we want to get into?
Let's talk about
is,
healthcare.
But let me frame it for the audience so they know what we want. What I want you to be talking about is the very thing: fiscal control. We've talked about tax revenue. Now I think we need to talk about good stewardship of what does come in. I think cutting budgets could be a good thing, Jim. So let's take it back to you.
I agree.
I mean, not cuts
I totally
across
agree.
The board.
And you have to go in and you have to look at each budget in detail. And what we've done in the last couple of years, and Scott started that program, was changing the budgeting process we've used for over 50 years. And so we have always looked in, and we've produced 130 different documents, 120 to 130 bills that are the budget bills for each agency. And we looked at an agency from top to bottom. What have we been doing? And then what other changes need to happen this year? For ISP, for example, that might be, hey, the bulletproof vests are worn out. We have to have new bulletproof vests. The cars are worn out. We have to buy new cars.
What about Medicaid? Medicaid has come up as an area needed to be better stewardship and cuts.
That's my point. I'm providing simple examples to make sure everyone understands that how this works, because Medicaid gets so obtuse. But we have to be able to look at those budgets in detail. And what we did in the last couple of years, I have spent 4 years in the system, what we had used since the 70s, and we had each budget out individually. And so we would go over a matter of a month and a half or more to set all those agency budgets. The last couple of years, we have broken the budgets into what we call maintenance and enhancement. And we go in one morning, and in 3 hours, we spend over $12 to $13 billion in quote maintenance budgets, omnibus style budgets, just like are produced in Washington, D.C. We changed the system, and it was because people didn't want to come home and be responsible for their votes, because they wanted to have a vote that I voted yes on this or I voted no, and then depending on who you're talking to, you could highlight one or the other.
So, okay, Scott, what's your comment on that?
Well, I'm a little confused as whether Senator Woodward agrees with the budget reform process that we implemented mainly in 2024, which I think is a great process. When I got to the Senate Finance Committee in 2023, I learned that out of the $14 billion of expenditures every year, we only reviewed a very small percentage every year. And I would rather us actually dive into the base budgets of the agencies. We assume that if something was approved 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago, that everything's fine, because we never actually look further than the new spending items.
So when you're saying base budgets, is that the same language when Jim said maintenance budgets? It's just
we'll go ahead and say those are the same. So basically we take last year's funding and we carry it forward, and then really all the Finance Committee is doing is looking at the new spending requests in detail. So in the budget book, we'll get literally, here's the request. We want this many new people. We need this much money for equipment. And this is the program that we're going to do. So if we approve that this year, that might be there 20 years from now. And it may be redundant.
Because it becomes maintenance. It becomes a part of the ongoing.
In future years, we don't review it anymore.
This is exactly the farce that I'm trying. That's why I'm saying this is a scheme. Because we used to do it in 130 different documents. We did. He was not there. He didn't see the process. We had all those documents separate. Now we do, all of that gets piled up, and in 3 hours we spend $12 to $13 billion. There's no detail given in those budgets.
Right.
We have put multiple agencies, 10 or more agencies,
so
in one packet.
So are you against the idea of zero-based? I know that's got...
I am totally for it. We used
to,
many of the members of JFAC were doing that, going in, and because when you have the individual documents, you can see it. Yeah, the rest of the legislature outside of JFAC can also see that.
So you weren't just funding maintenance. You were going back. Am I understanding that correctly?
There's completely a disagreement, because I think this current system was put in place for political reasons, and I can show you how there was more resolution, more transparency, easier to see in the process that we used for 50 years. We were a model for the country.
Okay, so that model, Scott, you're not in agreement with, and what is it about that model that's wrong?
But he has to come home.
So he calls it a scheme, but the reality is what he's not telling you is they approve basically the keep the lights on budget. In other words, everything stays the same, and then they literally can spend the next 2 months in the legislative session
adding,
not just adding, but taking things away. So until the legislative session is done and all the bills have been passed, the budget is not set for the next fiscal year. So just because a budget gets passed that was last, essentially this year's base budget, does not mean that you can't then go in and take something back out that's a redundant program that ought to be taken out. So
was that done this year? Was that
no.
done this year?
Nothing no, was, we did all the maintenance budgets the base, and then other pieces were
nothing
added.
Nothing got taken
we didn't
out.
Get, no, that's exactly right.
Do you think something should have been taken out from those baseline maintenance
we
budgets?
We should be looking at all the programs we run. We did have conversations this year, and we did trim out some different programs, so, not from the maintenance budgets beforehand. But you have to go in, you have to be able to see. I'll tell you why I think it's a scheme. I have a text message. It came from Scott from a couple years ago. Let's try to, here's the text message. Let's try to stay ahead on the law enforcement stuff this year. Maybe we can fix stuff before it gets a bad spending rating. That way we don't have to, quote, vote against public safety. That's what this is about, that you had to come home and answer to folks that I voted against the Idaho State Police budget because you had to vote for the entire budget instead of splitting it out into two budgets. And that's what the system was. That's what the scheme was.
So this is the problem is ISP at one point wanted new helicopters, and in the old system of budgeting, you had to essentially, you only got one vote on the ISP budget. So you basically had to take all the old stuff and all the new stuff, and you get that one vote.
No, we had two sets of budgets.
It is not nuanced enough. In the old system of budgeting, they never did go deep, and they never cut anything. And in fact, before I got into the Senate, I looked at the previous 6 years before I was in the Senate, and the Senate never voted against a single budget that came to the Senate floor, which means that everything that the committee passes sent to the floor, the senators automatically approve.
This is
going to break again. I have a quick comment.
This is exactly why we had a system. It was a model system. We had 10 representatives and 10 senators. They came together. They ironed it out ahead of time. They actually agreed on something.
I don't know about ironing out is the word I want. I want somebody to go back into that.
That was the part we're ironing out.
$1 million budget at the university, Cal State LA. And honestly, if we had been working with maintenance budgets from even 5 years before, we were way off the mark in what the university actually needed to spend money on.
I'm advocating against maintenance budgets.
Yeah, okay. So, Scott.
No.
Well, so
they changed to maintenance budgets. They changed to omnibus bills.
But what we just heard is that if 20 people out of the 105 legislators send something to the floor, that the rest of the 85 should just trust them. And I don't think that's the design of the system. I think those 85 should exercise their independent judgment.
Deep. All right,
still, we're exercising their judgment.
You guys are so good. We got it going on. We got to take a break. We're going to do that right now.
At Easy Cater, we believe every workday gets better with great food. The 9 a.m. staff meeting? How about breakfast burritos and lots of coffee? Big client presentation at noon? Let's do Mediterranean bowls. Accounting's got to work late. Keep them pepped up with spicy noodles. With Easy Cater, you get a huge variety of favorite restaurants with tools to help meet dietary needs and stay on budget, all on one platform. So make every workday better with Easy Cater. Start an order at easycater.com.
Hi, this is Brett Taylor with Taylor & Son Chevrolet, serving the greater Sandpoint area. The clocks have been rolled forward and we trudge through spring, which means a lot of North Idaho customers will be looking for the best price on a new set of tires. Taylor & Sons has taken action. Right now, we have the best selection of name brand tires our dealership has ever had. Taylor & Sons is the premier location to find the exact tires you're looking for at the best price. Taylor & Sons stocks and sells all major tire brands, Michelin, BFG, Goodyear, Bridgestone, and more. Taylor & Sons offers a 30-day price match guarantee on most major brands of tires. If you find a better price within 30 days of purchase, Taylor & Sons will refund the difference. In addition to the price match guarantee, Taylor & Sons is offering rebates and discounts on select brands of tires now through April 30th. All of the work is performed in our clean, state-of-the-art facility. You can view our current service department specials online at tschevy.com, and for your convenience, online scheduling is available. For guest-focused service, a world-class facility, and value for your money, it's Taylor & Sons Chevrolet.
Have you been thinking of joining the YMCA? Well, spring is the perfect time. Every new member who signs up between April 1st and May 17th will have no join fee and will be entered to win 3 free months of membership. You get so much when you join the Y. You get access to all 5 local Inland Northwest YMCA locations, 2 free hours of child watch per day when you're at the Y, and you'll receive a handful of guest passes so that you can bring a friend. You also get nationwide access to YMCAs across the country when you travel. Are you already a YMCA member? member and thinking, hey, wait a second, what about me? Well, don't worry, I've got your back. All current YMCA members are automatically entered into a separate drawing for an additional 3 months of membership. That's right, there will be two lucky winners at each of our branches that will receive 3 months of waived membership fees to our YMCAs. Stop by your closest YMCA or visit ymcaiaw.org to join today. This is just another reason that there is no place like this place. The YMCA of the Inland Northwest is a local 501c3 nonprofit charity.
Take living to the next level at Under the Sun in downtown Bonners Ferry. Come shop with friends and enjoy lunch in the bistro with its wonderful food selection, plus beer and wine, and the espresso bar with its organic coffee and more. Downstairs, you can explore the new women's consignment clothing boutique, Handpicked, open at 9 a.m. Monday through Saturday. Under the Sun, where the sun is always shining.
News Talk 97.1.
Hey everybody, thank you for being with us today. It is just so interesting for me, I hope for you, I know for you, to hear two candidates who are telling you what they really think and what they really believe, and we're trying to distinguish for you so you can make an informed vote. Okay, our next topic that these gentlemen, Jim Woodward and Scott Herndon, are going to comment on is education. I'm going to start them off with the launch program. Are they in favor of it, not in favor of it? And then they're going to bring up an issue in education that they think is important. So, Scott, starting with you, what's your position, keep or not keep the launch program?
Well, just for listeners, in case they don't know, launch program is basically money for post-secondary. In other words, you graduate from high school, and it's money that's available from taxpayers for training after high school. It also goes to colleges and universities, and it actually goes to private colleges and universities and religious colleges and universities. So it was a new program created. I voted against it. I think it was 2023, if I recall. And it passed the Senate 20-15 with the 7 Democrats and 13 of the Republicans, and 15 of the Republicans voted against it. And it has a sunset clause. It does go out of Idaho code, expires, I believe, in 2028. And so it's basically on a test run right now. Now, what's interesting is I've heard complaints about the Parental Choice Tax Credit, which is a different program, $50 million for people with kids that are K through 12. And people have argued that the Parental Choice Tax Credit would deprive money from public education. But I would actually tell you that Launch really did, because Launch started in a 2022 special session. And it was originally intended to be money, $80 million a year, that was going to go to K through 12. And then it got rerouted to post-secondary after high school graduation. And what's worse is the first $15 million almost of Launch went to Micron Corporation, literally a payment to Micron Corporation. And Micron Corporation is a $37 billion a year annual revenue worldwide corporation. I don't think they need $15 million of taxpayer money from Idaho.
They're not up to receive any more from that. That's my understanding. I don't know. Is that true? That Micron is not eligible for
any more? No, but that was literally like $15 million of that original earmark went to them. And then I also don't, just like people disagreed with the idea of Joe Biden forgiving student loans and giving away free college, that's essentially what we're doing with Launch. And I would actually just rather see us fulfill our constitutional responsibility, which is to fully fund a system of K through 12 public schools in the state of Idaho. And so that's where I would have put the money and not in Launch.
So you're basically no to Launch.
Correct.
And let it sunset.
Correct.
All right. Jim, what's your position on the Launch program?
Well, we get to agree on something again, that we need to fund the K-12 education system. That is our basic promise to all Idahoans. I support education for all kids in Idaho. We do have...
So Launch or no?
I'm answering that.
Okay.
Yeah, we do have... a problem here with having enough workforce in Idaho. And so when you have a problem and you recognize it, you identify it, then sometimes you go after a solution. And that's what that's been. You know, we I think there are a couple things going on here in Idaho. In the nation as a whole, we have the baby boomer generation is at toward the end of life, and services are necessary. People, some of those baby boomers are coming here to Idaho. The population goes up 40 to 50,000 people per year. And so they move here and their expectations, they're looking for a plumber, they're looking for an electrician, a nurse, or a CNA, and that's what the launch program is about, providing an opportunity for the kids who are here in Idaho to learn a trade.
It's not limited or a profession. To trades, though.
I mean, no, it's not, but it's limited to
those trades.
To jobs that are in demand. And so that we're trying to take care of filling those jobs that are in demand,
so
making
you
sure
like
that
the
kids,
launch program. You want
well,
to keep
I think,
it.
I certainly think there is a return on investment in it, that was we see
so
it right now.
So you want to keep it?
Not indefinitely. Just like any other budget, we should always be looking at it and seeing whether or not it's providing
so
us a return.
So far, it's a keeper.
Right now it is, but we get the chance to review it here in 2028.
Okay, and you have a comment,
Well,
Scott.
This is just an example. We spent $80 million a year on the program, and then
We took $10 million out this year. And
but then we
$10
cut benefits for disabled people. Rather than taking away this thing that we created for free in 2023 and really started operating in 2024, why do we have that new government program when we're having to trim actually what are more essential services in Idaho? I mean, if we're talking about a road problem, I wouldn't put it into launch. The problem is when government grows too big and goes into all these new services thinking it can solve a problem, we got to go back to the Reagan days. Government is the problem. It's not the solution to a problem. Government never efficiently solves a problem. And so we should try to keep government focused on a few core issues. Transportation and education are legitimate issues for government. We got into problems when we start having government pay for health care because now we pay twice as much per person for health care than any European country. And I think it's because government is the single biggest payer in the health care market.
So if government programs are the problem and people take in unnecessary money from government, then why did you take the Paycheck Protection Plan program in during COVID? You and your brother both took that, and that was you were in an essential service. You are not shut down. You continued to operate.
I'm going to correct that. I actually didn't take the Paycheck Protection Program.
$7,500.
No, that's not true, Jim. So you can look at the records. I took one payment from not the Paycheck Protection Program. It was a different program. And I used that money to sue the governor for making a crime to go to church. So this was right at the beginning of the COVID situation. And I figure I'm going to use the governor's money. It was state money allocated.
Taxpayer money.
And we used
I
him to sue.
2 seconds.
That's because
seconds.
He shut down church and made it a crime to go to church. And then Jim Woodward wasn't willing to actually stop companies from discriminating against their
That's
employees
be,
by passing the COVID Pause
word.
Act.
I'm
so.
Going to talk to my boss about getting you back on, you guys. We've got it going on. I enjoy it so much. We are at the last word. Say goodbye to the audience.
Thanks. I just would like to hear Scott say whether or not I donated to the Democrat Party.
Did he donate to the Democrat Party?
Yeah, so Jim actually
Oh my gosh, you guys. It was yes or no.
No, listen to this. So for 3 years on the Sunshine Reports with the Secretary of State, it showed that Jim had donated. And Jim knows that the Democratic Party made a mistake. There and is- now I know that too. But he didn't tell people recently at a forum, honestly, that it was a mistake of the Democratic Party. And it's on the public record on the Sunshine Reports and just got changed on March 26. He does have donations from Kamala Harris supporters.
Since you're
max
talking,
donations.
Say goodbye to so the
Scott knows that
report.
I did not vote to the or did not donate to
Correct.
The Democrat
and,
Party.
But you said that I lied about that, but I just took it straight off the Sunshine Reports. And the same day you found
you
out is the same day I found
ask
out.
And you put out to the public that
the
I personally
day I found out
I personally
is the same
wrote
day
a
he
check.
Found out.
I personally
never
wrote
a
check is
thing.
What you said. And I did not personally
that's
write a
because
check.
Because that's what the Sunshine Reports show. Go to the Idaho Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee. You'll see a $2,600 donation
goodbye
attributed to him,
guys.
But apparently not.
They want you. They each want you to vote for them. You can only vote for one. It's your choice. That's the program for today. Thank you, Jim Woodward and Scott Herndon. Next week, we continue focusing on opposing candidates, often opposing views. State Representative Cornell Razor will be here to debate challenger Chuck Lohman. And yes, we continue to celebrate America 250 and the profound wisdom of our founding fathers. Today, listen to John Quincy Adams. I could use him today. He was the son of John Adams. John Quincy was greatly admired Secretary of State. He was instrumental in negotiating Florida away from Spain and helping the president get the Monroe Doctrine, still in effect today. And John Quincy Adams was the sixth president of the United States. He was staunchly dedicated to public service, I think like our two guests today. And he said famously, "The duty is ours. The results are God's." Amen to that. All right. So until next Tuesday, this is Barbara reminding us all to slow down on the roads and on the water, to love each other, and may God continue to bless America.